Well, you guys have the C team, as you just heard. It's not the A team or the B team. You got the C team, and that's okay. First of all, before we go any further, I just want to say thank you to our AV team up there. They're doing a great job today. They're hitting some different speed bumps, and that's okay. Is it working? Okay. Slideshow working? We're good? Yeah, awesome. They're the best. That's how we do this. They're working with some new equipment when it comes to the visual side of this, so we're just trying to see how it works. So bear with us. So I know this is going to come as no surprise to anyone here, but each of our lives are comprised of a series of moments. Yeah, thanks. I'll be here all week. Anyway, seriously, I want you to think about your life, those moments which make it up. Some of these moments may seem extraordinarily significant at the time, but they soon fade out of our memories and into obscurity. While others may seem completely insignificant at the time, but it's those very moments that we find shape and mold us. It's these moments that the artist who created and formed each of us in his image for a specific purpose uses in the process of our sanctification. So this morning I want to speak to you about one of those moments in my own life, one of those experiences, and one of those people who which God used to dramatically impact my life. And through the telling, I hope to inspire you to finish the race set before each and every one of you. Go ahead and start them. So it may not look like it now. In fact, I know it doesn't. But when I was in high school and college, I was a long-distance runner, track and cross-country. In high school, my average mile time was 6 minutes. I bring that up, not to brag, but because it's pretty rough. But you'll see why in a minute. It was 6 minutes during the course of a 3 mile race. So do that, 6 times 3, that's 18 minutes. I wasn't the best by any means, nor was I remarkable or particularly talented or skilled, but I was a workhorse. I was consistent and teachable. I'd hit that 6 minute mark every time. Coaches liked that for some reason. They knew you weren't going to get many surprises. But even though I had attended the North Carolina State Championship cross country race for 3 years, two of which as captain, I knew that running in college was just not an option. I knew that that wasn't going to happen. Just because I was average. There was nothing special about me at all. So the fall of my senior year, I was stressing out about where to go to school. I knew I wanted to attend a Christian college or university to major in youth ministry, but other than that, I was clueless. I had no idea. As a matter of fact, I can remember sitting in Jessup's office at the high school, and we talked about this. Where am I going to go? What am I going to do? It was his first year, and it was my senior year, and we kicked it off that way. But Dakota Falls College was having a campus preview one weekend, and I decided to attend. And since this occurred in the middle of cross-country season, I said, you know what, I'm just going to go to the meeting and see about it. So I knew I wasn't good enough. I was well aware, but I loved running. For me, running was a way to escape from whatever was going on in my life. All the worries and stress of the typical high school student who still lived at home and had no bills. Stress. Yeah, you know. But I walked in the meeting and I sat in the very back because I grew up in a Baptist church and I was waiting for the coach to arrive. And all of a sudden, this rather large African-American man, about 6'4", 270, 280, pictures aren't working, I don't think, so I can't show you. But a big guy walks into the room and he proceeds to introduce himself as the mighty Joe Young. No joke, that's how he introduced himself, as the mighty Joe Young, all one phrase. And he told us he was the cross-country coach at Tocoa. So he was telling us about the program and told us about how they were doing in nationals and told us all this stuff. And I'm sitting there in the program just going, there's no way. I can't. But after the meeting, as I was walking out, I heard, Blake. Looked around. I didn't know anybody. It wasn't like I had a bunch of friends there at the school. I knew no one in the entire room. And so I looked around and it was the coach. He's sitting there looking at me. And he proceeded to talk to me about running, about school, about myself, and about my hometown. He knew everything about me. Everything about me when it came to my running career. He knew my average times. He knew my personal records. He knew what I had run in the race the week before that. He knew all of that. To this day, I don't know how he knew that or why he knew that or But he did. And it wasn't just me he knew that for. He knew that for every person he recruited. But he knew everything about it. And to me, that was shocking because, like I said, I was nothing special. I was mediocre as a runner. I was average. You literally could go to any public high school in the state of North Carolina and you could find seven guys like me. Well, maybe not as good looking, but you could find seven guys similar to me. Now, I was mediocre, but he knew everything about me. And I don't know about you if you've ever been in a situation like that, but it made me feel valued and wanted. The very last thing he said to me was, "You're a leader on your team, and we would love to have you come run for us at Tocoa Falls." My jaw hit the ground. I said, I'm average. I know what I'm at. My captain in my high school team at that point was running 440 miles. I was running 6. There's no way I would be recruited. Joe said, "I can work with that." And at that moment, I was sold. At that moment, I decided I was going to run for Tocoa. Now, running in college was a completely different world than running in high school. In high school, you ran a 3-mile race, a 5K. But in college, you ran an 8K race, which was a 5-mile. No one told me this when I was signing up for this. Nobody. Next thing you know, I'm running a 5-mile race every Saturday, and I am hating it. It's terrible. But in order to accomplish this, running 5 miles at a dead sprint, we'd be doing a lot of prep work. 70 to 80 miles a week was our average. I remember one particular week that he made us run 120, and we all just about killed him. But it happened. Those were two-a-days, and they were terrible. But one of the things he used to say, he said that running was like baking a cake. You put in all the work ahead of time, and then on Saturday, you got to eat the cake. I never had any cake. I don't know what he was talking about. It was all terrible. But for some reason, he seemed to think that was a good thing to say. But from the beginning of our season, our focus was on the national championship race that fall. That was our focus from the beginning. And some of you may have heard this story, but I don't know that I've ever shared aspects of this. But it was in Cedarville, Ohio in November. Every day we sat through a 30-minute lecture before we ever went on the trail telling us that we were champions, telling us that we had what it takes, that we were capable, that we may be the underdogs, but the national title would be ours. We started the season, hey, they worked. We started the season ranked 10th in the nation in our division out of 14 teams. That's not promising. NCCAA D2 is still, it's not competitive, but it's there. That's not promising. When you're told you're 10th out of the 14 that are in there, you're like, oh, that sucks. But anyway, after our first race, we ended up getting pumped up to 7th seed and then 5th seed. Until going to nationals, we found ourselves to be the 3rd seed in the nation. I don't know about you, but as an 18-year-old kid, being told I'm a member of a team that's the 3rd in the nation, I'm like, yeah, I'm awesome. It wasn't awesome, but still, it was kind of cool. Running, though, became everything I was. I ran it. I drank it. I slept it. I dreamt it. I can remember so many times my roommate hated me because I'd be sleeping on the bottom bunk, and I'd run in my sleep as I'm laying on the bed, and I woke myself up so many times kicking the wall. Just because we did so much of that. Our every breath we had was focused on winning the title. As a matter of fact, we were trained as we were doing hill repeats. There's Joe. As we were doing hill repeats to breathe out national and to breathe in champions. That was everything we were. But you see, nationals was important for Joe. But what was more important was molding and shaping a ragtag crew. And you've seen in these pictures. You can stop it there. You can see in these pictures that none of us really look alike. None of us came from the same backgrounds. There were different ethnicities. But he took us and he molded and shaped a ragtag crew of boys into something resembling men. We had two guys from the inner city, two missionary kids, one from Ireland, one from Brazil. We had a couple of kids from broken homes. We had the obligatory homeschooler, and then you had me. In other circumstances, there is no reason why we would get along, but we came together united with one goal, one purpose, and one vision. To this day, these are the guys that I go to. As a matter of fact, the guy holding the blue plaque right there, that's actually the wrapper for the plaque I'm holding. That was my roommate my sophomore and junior year, and he and I were on the phone last night as I was prepping for this. This is family to me. But Coach used to say that time only matters in prison or when you're waiting tables. It was one of his Joe-isms. But to us, time was everything. And under his tutelage and his coaching, we watched our times begin to drop. I went from running a 6-minute mile in high school to a 4:35 mile by the end of my freshman year. Going into nationals, every one of our 7 guys ran a sub 30-minute 5 mile. That's a big deal. Now November 10th, 2007, we raced the national championship in Cedarville, Ohio. This is the end of a season that was plagued with injuries and mishaps. Everything from our captain spraining his ankle in the first mile of his first race of his senior year to academic and behavioral probation. Somehow, though, despite the injuries, I mean, I myself had developed severe tendonitis and bursitis in both of my hips and barely scraped by general college math. Every one of the guys who started the journey with us was eligible and ran the national championship race. I'll never forget the night before the race. Coach called us into the hotel room and proceeded with his usual spiel. We were champions. We were hungry. We wanted it more than anybody else there. The typical going up. I was coming off a victory 2 weeks beforehand. I'd won the Kentucky Christian University race. Not just for the team, but the whole thing. I was confident. Then something changed. The usual inspirational pep talk stopped, and Joe's eyes got kind of misty. He said, "Guys, none of this matters if there is sin in the camp, though. It doesn't matter how good we are and how much we've trained. If you guys aren't living right, then God will not bless us. We aren't doing this for ourselves. We're doing it for Him." To this day, that phrase, that thought just sends chills up my spine, because there was sin in the camp, in all of us. Not the least of which was that I personally had made running my idol. I invested all my time, my energy, my money into running. My girlfriend at the time used to joke and say that during cross-country season, she didn't have a boyfriend. And she was right. There was sin in the camp. The next morning, we raced nationals. I looked up the weather while preparing this, and it said it was 42 degrees, it was dry, and it was not windy. I was there, it was 20 degrees, it was snowing, and it was blowing like crazy. But anyway, it was terrible. But, long story short, we ran the race. I had the worst race of my entire college career. Remember what I told you my mile times were in high school, about 6 minutes? Guess what I was running? About 6-minute miles. I had the worst race of my entire college career, clocking in at 30:30 for a 5-mile race. I was outkicked and passed at the last 400 yards by a guy from Northwestern University, something that had never happened from the moment I started running as a sophomore in high school. I'd never been outraced at the last bit, ever. Crossing the finish, though, I was miserable. I'd been beaten, I was cold, and I hit the mental wall and just wanted to give up. But I had finished the race. Long story short, in the interest of time, I'm going to go ahead and just go off script for a minute. We showered, we changed, we went to the banquet. I wasn't feeling that great, but everybody else was happy. And then we get there, and Coach hands us a paper, and the paper says that Chippewa Falls College had gotten the first in the nation in the NCCAA D2. Everything we had worked for was there. Every bit of our time and our preparation, everything was ours. This was not from nationals, by the way. This is from a Piedmont Invitational race. It was the only one I could find. And we were told we won it. And we're celebrating and we're all happy. And then I look over at my coach. And I see him pick up the piece of paper. And just start shaking his head just like that. He took a pencil, circled some things, and went over to the head of the NCCAA D2, one of the officials. Hands him the paper and starts shaking his head and explaining. We had lost the national championship race by 3 points. 0.04 seconds. Everything we had worked for months went up in smoke like that. And they were going to give it to us. They were going to straight give it to us. And if it hadn't been for Joe being a man of integrity and saying, "No, we didn't earn this, we can't accept it," to this day I would be a national champion. But I'm not. I'm second place. And that's okay. Because I learned more that day about what it means. Go to the next picture. This is what happened afterwards. This was at nationals. We'd just been told, and every one of us was bawling. But this is what, to me, was a defining moment. We had worked our tails off for this. This was everything that we cared about. And we had done everything. We'd done everything we could. We'd finished the race. But our priorities weren't in the right place. our priorities weren't where they needed to be. There was sin in the camp, and as a result, we weren't blessed with a national title. Our Cinderella story had come to an end, guys, but I'll never forget what that season had taught me about finishing the race. One of the passages that Joe ended up using weekly with us was Hebrews chapter 12. It says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. Lay aside every weight and sin, and run with endurance the race that is set before us." Each of us is running a race. We have a goal and we have a responsibility as Christians. The God who spoke all of this into existence knows your name and calls you into relationship with him, but he didn't do it so that you could be stagnant. He didn't do it so you could sit in a pew every Sunday and simply exist. You were created with a divinely inspired purpose in mind. Once we accept the call of Jesus in our lives, we join with him, as Paul says in 2 Corinthians, in this marvelous message of reconciliation. If you look at verse 2 in Hebrews 12, it tells us that Jesus endured the cross for the joy that was set before him. And what was that joy? It is you and me. We are the joy that was set before him. It is bringing us back into that relationship, restoring the broken relationship between us and the Father. That was Jesus' joy and inspiration and why he went to the cross, and he calls us to partner with him in drawing others back to God. This is the race that is set before you. You see, we've been speaking a lot about legacy with our teenagers lately. What you leave behind you, how it is that you'll be remembered. This is all encompassing because your legacy is made up of what you say, what you do, who you are. On March 8th of this year, I received a phone call that rocked my world. I got a phone call from Elliot, my roommate, and he said, "Have you heard about Joe?" I said, "No, what's going on?" At 44 years old, Joe passed away. He left behind a daughter who was 8 months pregnant and another daughter who was married 2 weeks after his funeral. This man was my mentor, my spiritual advisor. In fact, up until the day he died, I kept in contact with him because he'd made such an impact on my life. He was the kind of guy who loved and cared about people. He wanted the best for him, even if he didn't know them. If you were one of his runners, you were one of his kids. I can't tell you how many plane tickets, iPods, shoes were bought for his people. Jobs created. We attended his funeral March 13th, and it was amazing. As I said, he was only 44. But it was incredible to see the impact he had made. The church was about this size, maybe a little bit bigger, and it was standing room only. Along one wall, on one side of the church, was probably 100 high school students. These students came from inner city Toccoa, which doesn't sound like that big of a deal, but that's the furthest north of the Georgia housing projects. My freshman year, a pastor was murdered there, standing at a gas station, literally half a mile from where I went to school. It's not a nice place. And yet, these students are here, and they're hearing about Jesus. They heard over and over that day in the course of the four-hour-long funeral that the reason why Joe loved them so much, why he invested so much into them, was because of Jesus. The reason why he did what he did was because Jesus loved him, and he was trying to show them all that love. I don't know what happened. I don't know if any of those students came to know Jesus, but to me, that is a legacy, to have people fly in from all over the country, first of all, but then to have your current team hear all about the reason why you treated them the way you did is because Jesus loves them. That's amazing. We finish the race, guys, by remembering our purpose and living intentionally. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 22 through 27 says, "To the weak I became weak that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all people that by all means I may save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I might share with them in its blessing. Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you might attain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. So I do not run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air, but I discipline my body to keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified. You see, we were created with a purpose, ladies and gentlemen, and that purpose is to live in such a way that we draw others into a saving relationship with Jesus. In verse 23, Paul spells it all out. Everything that he does is for the sake of the gospel. The good news that God became man, that he lived a sinless life, died on the cross in our place, was raised on the third day and ascended into heaven. And why? To reconcile you and I to the Father above, so that you and I can be in right relationship with him. This is the good news. No longer are we outside. No longer are we separated from the Father. Instead, we are drawn into relationship with him so that we in turn can draw others into this same relationship. So as a result, we do not live aimlessly, but with intention. Do you truly want your community to change? We're talking about going into Holly Haven here in a little bit. Do you want that community to change? Do you want your family members, your friends, and your neighbors to come into a saving relationship with Jesus? We do this by living with intention. We do this by acknowledging that every action we make and every word that we say will either entice others to come into relationship with the Father or to shun him. This is our responsibility and ours alone. Number two, finish the race by remembering that it is not about you. It is not about you. Hebrews 12 speaks of the great cloud of witnesses. We often, and rightly so, take it to mean those who have gone on before. But there are also those who know you are a Christian, and they are watching every single move that you make. Your children, your grandchildren, your siblings, your co-workers, each of them are looking to you to see how Jesus impacts the way that you react to different situations. Our culture teaches us from a very young age to be selfish and to consume. Our sin nature tells us that this world is all about me, what I want and what I desire. And sin at its very core, as a result, is selfishness. If you are only living for you, then you will never finish the race. When I was running and abusing my body, it wasn't about me. I wasn't doing it for Blake. I was doing it for a coach that believed in me and friends of mine, brothers of mine, who ran and sacrificed for me. If it would have been up to me, in all honesty, I would have found a hammock and I would have been laid down. I was lazy. But guys, there's this guy named Inky Johnson. He's a former tight end for Tennessee Volunteers. And he says this about it. He said, "Do you know why people quit? People don't have pride in what they do. You know why people stop? They are selfish and it's just about them. When you have a bigger purpose as to why you are doing what you're doing and you want to honor the sacrifices that others have made for you, it is nothing for you to keep going when you hit adversity. If every decision and choice that you make is only about you, at some point you're going to hit something that is a lot tougher than you that is going to make you quit because you don't have a driving force as to why it is that you do what you do." So my question is, what is that driving force? What is your purpose? You see, we have a corporate purpose to draw others into a saving relationship with God, but you also have an individual purpose, each and every one of you. You have talents, giftings, opportunities, and missions fields that are open to you and to you alone. Are you going to honor the sacrifice of Jesus and choose to live for something better than yourself, something of eternal consequence? This town, this country, or county, this nation, and this world is dying all around us, and we have opportunities daily that we pass up because we forget that it isn't about us. At a certain point in your life, it can't just be about you. The moment that we understand that, things begin to change. Finally, finish the race by remembering where your strength comes from. You may not know this, but runners are a little strange, a little weird. We have names for things a lot of people don't understand, and one of them is the dreaded wall. The wall. The wall is whenever you can't go any further. It's literally you're running, and then all of a sudden, if you go on YouTube and you type in runners hitting the wall, you literally will see that. There's nothing there, but their bodies stop, and they just can't do anything else. It's a literal thing. It's where you push yourself so far that your body's just done. But it's one of those things that you have to push through as a runner because you have to finish the race. We as Christians often experience the same thing. We have calamities. We have unfortunate events. We have tragedies or just bad days. They seem to pile up and they seem to hit us one right after the other and put us in a mental position where we do not care about the laundry, let alone the advance of the gospel. I know about you. I had one of those mornings today. Everything that went wrong could go wrong, or everything that could go wrong did go wrong. But we have those moments. It's so easy to focus solely on the circumstances we are going through at whatever given moment. It's so easy to throw up our hands and quit. It's so easy to make excuses and say things like, I can't take it anymore, I'm at my wit's end. But in the midst of these moments, in order for us to finish the race, we must remember where our strength comes from. Jesus knows about becoming weary. In fact, weariness is spoken of repeatedly throughout the New Testament. But as Hebrews 12:3 says, consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. This is the answer to hitting the wall, so to speak. Remember where your strength comes from. Jesus is our example, and we are to follow him in such a way that others are inspired to do likewise. In the midst of our daily grind, whenever things are difficult and all we see is our circumstances or the wall, it is so easy for us to forget this. Our strength comes from Jesus. Isaiah 40:28-31 says, have you not known and have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint. He does not grow weary. His understanding is unsearchable. He gives power to the faint. To him who has no might, he increases strength. Even youths fall faint and weary, and young men shall be exhausted. But they who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. So whenever you feel like quitting, whenever you feel like you've hit the metaphorical wall in your personal life, whenever the circumstances of your day-to-day grind start to grind you down, remember who you are and whose you are. The grace of Jesus is more than sufficient for whatever trial or tribulation you are facing today. The Holy Spirit is more than capable of giving us the strength that we need, not only to finish the race, but to finish that race well. Finish the race by choosing to look past your circumstances and remember who is the source of your strength. Finish the race by remembering that it is not about you, your family, or even your nation. We are to live a gospel-centric lifestyle where Jesus and other people far outweigh our own petty wants and desires. Finally, we must, as Hebrews 12:12 says, take a new grip with our tired hands and strengthen our weak knees. We must take a new grip on our understanding of the gospel and choose to live intentionally as ambassadors of the light in this world of dark and desperation. Throughout the Pauline epistles, this metaphor of running and of running a race is used repeatedly. And I want to close today by reading his words to the Philippians church in Philippians 3:12 through 14. Not that I have already obtained this or am already perfect, but I press on to make it my own because Christ Jesus has made me his own. Brothers, do not consider that I have made it my own, but one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and straining forward to what lies ahead. I press on toward the goal for the prize of the upward calling of God in Christ Jesus. You see, Paul makes it clear. We press on, and we run this race out of love for and ever mindful of the sacrifice of Jesus, who made us his own. Forget what happened before, the failures and the mistakes. Instead, run this race we call life with endurance, knowing that you are loved, and that you are making an eternal impact on the lives of every person you come into contact with. Continue pressing forward. Push through the wall and leave behind a legacy that is eternal.